We'll skip into the August 1st, 2008 edition of the Rain Report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to another edition of the Rain Report. These MP3 encoded programs are available as a free weekly download and podcast from therainreport.com. I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK. Did you ever dabble in CB radio? A great many hams have. Even Rain's founder producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, after he became a ham radio operator. That would explain a lot. We're going to wax nostalgic the next 2 weeks by taking a brief look at the evolution of the Citizens Band CB radio service with Jeff Reed, a prolific Canadian freelance writer. Jeff penned an article in the July 2008 edition of Popular Communications, Popcom Mag, entitled Ready to Roll with CB Radio? Hap caught up with this busy, internationally recognized writer this past week.
The FCC first issued a license for CB radio, then called Class D 27 MHz, commonly known as, in 1948. It was a fellow named Al Gross, and his license was 19W0001. The proper title for it back then was Citizens Radio Service. And then it just evolved, as it has now, with truckers and small business operators. And then these people would bring them into their homes, and it became a hobby. And we all know what happened in the 70s with the big boom.
Why was CB developed, and why did the FCC, in their infinite non-wisdom, put it on 27 megahertz?
Why they chose that band, to be quite honest with you, I have no idea. Other than the fact that it was open for business communications, and they figured local business communications, therefore the distance, give or take 20 miles with a good operation between base and mobile, would be pertinent to the reason they actually issued the license. Now, as we all know, with skip and illegal power boosters and everything else, that can change quite readily. But like I said, I don't know the entire reason, but to me that would make sense.
I wonder if financially it would make sense, especially in the 50s. It was far more costly to develop a radio for VHF or UHF than it would have been for 27 megahertz.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly was the working man's radio. Yeah, certainly it was a lot more costly than they are today, our modern technology. But basically, comparatively speaking, it opened up communications to a whole new group of people. But I mean, yeah, if you look at the technology that was used in the radios back then, going from tubes to crystals, and now as we see with Cobra's new radio, it even has Bluetooth technology. It's come a long way.
The first CB license I know that my dad had was back in the 50s in Southern California. His call letters were like 11W4466, something like that. How did the whole call sign scheme evolve?
It was basically the FCC and then so here in Canada, Department of Communications. It was their way of the cash grab. I mean, this was how they were keeping track of who's paying what, who's paying their annual dues. It was their way of just keeping track. And ironically, later on, with such a boom, they just couldn't keep track anymore. I think at one point there were 500,000 licenses trying to be put through the system each month where they just gave up on it.
And I recall at one point in the 70s when the FCC was still charging $20?
That sounds about right. I think it was $35. Here in Canada, my first license was actually, my father bought it, and then I was using the radio through his name, and then later got my own license, and I think it was about $35, and then finally, come the 1980s, they just gave up on it. Basically, they're saying it was costing too much to actually issue these licenses than it was for the money they were making up by getting money from people that were getting the license. That and all the paperwork, and it was so time-consuming, and they also figured that CB was on its way down because of the advent of cell phones coming in.
Now, early on, of course, there were issues having to do with local communications versus long distance. In fact, I recall in the 50s when my dad set up our first CB radio, we lived on a little bit of a hill in northern San Diego County. I remember talking to a station in LA once and thinking, oh my God, I'm going to get busted. I'm talking to a guy 100 miles away.
Right.
One of the ironies of that was that if you were on a hill or on a mountain, you would go a whole lot further than what I'm sure it was designed for. But that was just the nature of a groundwave propagation, of course.
Right.
Later on, the hardware just became ubiquitous. The CB radios themselves, the antennas. I, for one, had a four-element fiberglass Shakespeare Blazer.
I remember that name, yeah.
And it was a great antenna, of course, performed well, but then when propagation is good on 27 or 28 megahertz, it really doesn't matter what you're running. I'm speaking with Jeff Reed, a Canadian freelance writer whose article,
Ready to Roll with CB Radio,
appeared in the July 2008 edition of Popular Communications, PopCom. Do we have any figures as to how many manufacturers there were of CB gear and hardware and what kind of market it was money-wise?
And you're talking when back in its heyday?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. I don't have exact numbers, but they were literally hundreds. I can remember the first radio I bought as far as a mobile. I walked up to the corner variety store. Literally, every corner variety store was selling CB radios. They also sold me a little back of set antenna, which was great for receiving the local truckers, not very good for talking. That's how readily available these things were. There were literally hundreds of manufacturers. Everybody was getting in on the act. And it was interesting because when I researched my article, Popular Communications, there were only a handful that were still quite active in here in North America in manufacturing CB radio, and of course Cobra being one of the leaders, Galaxy another. It's changed. I think there are just so many different areas of communications now that these companies have moved into, if they're still around for that matter. But yeah, literally hundreds, and that's just CB radios. That's probably not counting all the antenna manufacturers, and of course some of the companies would manufacture both.
Was there ever a price tag put on just how much money the CB business generated in the 70s?
Wow. Definitely billions of dollars were spent between the licenses, the CB radios themselves, the antennas, the coax, paying to have some of this equipment installed. The towers, if you got into some really good gear. I can remember you would check the want ads in the paper on the weekend, and there would be maybe 20 CB radios for sale. Now, if you see one at a flea market, you're lucky.
I remember when my wife and I got married in 1976, we put a Royce 40-channel AM-only radio in our van as we drove back from California to our home here in the Chicago area. Of course, in those days, truckers were a major component of CB radio. How much impact did truck stops themselves have on the whole CB market and the CB craze?
That's how it became popular. A couple of things happened. Back in 73, when we had an oil crisis, kind of a deja vu there. And then, of course, with the government imposing their 55-mile-per-hour speed limit, there was so much media coverage given to truckers, and they were always talking on their CB radios. Joe, there's gas for sale up here. It's this much cheaper than down the road. Or watch out for Smokey. Slow down when you're coming past this checkpoint. That it became a subculture. And before you know it, it was mainstream. They were making movies. In fact, interesting, I just found at Walmart in the $5 bin a copy of the movie Convoy that was made after C.W. McCall's song in 1976. Couldn't find it on Amazon anywhere. Finally found this thing. So the hobby continues.
Wasn't Smokey and the Bandit, didn't that have something to do with CB as well?
Oh yeah, and I have that. The first one's the best, by the way. If you're going to buy that three CDs or DVD set, the first one is by far the best. Again, it was kind of the chicken egg thing. Everybody was in on it.
General Electric, GE, had an ad campaign in the 70s for CB radios. GE, more than you can say about any other CB. The ads were voiced by Howard Cosell.
Is that right? You know, during the CB craze, I was in the early years of high school, grade 9, grade 10 sort of thing. When we were at school, we were talking about who we talked to on the CB the night before. And we could hardly wait to get home so we could go back and talk on the CB. It was like cell phones today, the kids with the cell phones, text messaging and talking to their friends. It was just something you did, a diversion or to pass time. But in reality, cell phones like CB radios, you know, they have a very solid purpose, or else they were intended to have a solid purpose, and still do. Like I said earlier, in any sector of society, you're going to have the good and the bad. And I think that's partly why it died off a little bit come the 80s, because there were so many bad CBers out there.
That's the first of two excerpts from Hap Holly, KC9RP's interview with the award-winning Canadian freelance writer Jeff Reed, whose Ready to Roll with CB Radio appeared in the July 2008 edition of PopCom, Popular Communications Magazine. Next week, we'll learn more about the revival of CB radio here in the 21st century. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2008. Rain, all rights reserved. Now for Rain's founder producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, bidding you all a very 73 and a big 10-4 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network. www.therainreport.com.